Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Today on The Grave Talks, the McPike Mansion. The McPike Mansion is one of those homes. One of those homes that draw you in and don't let go. This home would eventually speak to its current owner, Sharon, a woman who takes great pride in restoring this house and taking care of the spirits who reside there. Don and Lenny of Spectrawave's Paranormal Investigation Group join us today to discuss. They've been able to experience firsthand the spirits that reside there. Who are these spirits, though? Are they a residual glimpse back in time? Are they conscious entities still taking part in the life activities they once knew so well?
The history of McPike Mansion that we know of, it was built in the 1800s by a real estate developer in the area of Alton. Alton was a booming community at that time. It rests probably a little ways away from the Missouri border with St. Louis. So it's literally like 45 minutes away from St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. McPike, who his first name is Henry, built this building, and he was instrumental in putting Alton on the map. And he had lived there his entire life. His first wife died there. He had a child that died there. And after his child died and his wife passed away, he remarried and he lived there until the day he passed away. Now, McPike has stood there ever since and is owned currently by a lady named Sharon. And Sharon is extremely, extremely protective of her spirits that reside in the home. So we went there to investigate, and it's named as one of the top 50 haunted locations in America, to the point where Bradford Exchange even did a sculpture of the home and included it in their sculptures of the most haunted. I don't know if you've ever seen that or not, but it was interesting, and that's what piqued our attention to actually try to contact Sharon and go to McPike Mansion. So after we had gone to McPike Mansion and we were setting up the investigation, we should have known we were going to be in for some kind of a night. We had gone there, and we were just setting up, just in the process of getting our equipment out and putting our equipment out, some equipment out on the porch. It was only Lainey and I who were investigating the site. So we put some equipment on the porch, and Lainey was getting ready by the front door and had laid her cell phone down. Now, normally when we start investigations, after we initially set everything up, we put our phones on airplane mode. So the GSM doesn't affect any readings that we get from the REM pods or EMF. And that's a clear note for anybody who wants to become an investigator. That should be your first integral thing, is to airplane mode your phones while you're on an investigation. So that being said, Lainey had laid her phone down on a wicker chair that was on the front porch while she was going through equipment and starting to set things up. I had just started the video camera, so I was videotaping. And Lainey called me over quickly and said the phone is taking pictures by itself. So as the phone took pictures by itself, I was able to capture that on video. We do have that on our YouTube channel if anybody wants to check it out. The phone took a series of pictures. Nothing showed up on the pictures, by the way. And then the phone switched to video. and it began taking a video. And then it stopped taking a video, and it went back and took one last picture, and then it stopped. Now, I can tell you on any investigations that we've been on, and we've been on a numerous amount of investigations, we have never, ever had that happen prior or since. So that brings us to another part of the investigation. Most of the things that that occurred in the home to us were interactions with audio, with using a spirit box, which is a device that sweeps FM and AM frequencies quickly. And the theory is that you ultimately get can capture spirits through the entire frequency range if they talk. That's the theory behind it. So we did receive Henry's name when we were doing the spirit box session. And lo and behold, as we were wrapping up, we were in the foyer inside the home. And as we were wrapping up the spirit box session, Lainey had looked and saw out the doors. These are these glass-leaded 18th century doors where they're really opaque, so you can't really distinguish anything except light through these glass windows. And I'll defer to Lainey and let her say what.
That is when I saw a red and a white streak. It was right in front of the door. And, of course, we had equipment out there. So right away, I thought maybe someone was going to the equipment. So all of a sudden, I go, Don, someone's outside. Our equipment's out there. We got to go. He turned around. He's like, there's nobody out there. I don't see anything. I'm like, Don, there was a bright red and white streak. It was super bright. And he's like, Lainey, there's nothing out here.
And so as we both walked out there to investigate and to check the equipment that was on the porch that we had staged on the porch, we had walked to the front yard. And with our own ears, we actually heard the sound of horses walking. And if you've ever heard horses walk on a street or concrete, and more so on cobblestone, if you've ever taken a carriage ride in a major city, it's a distinct sound. Those hooves on concrete or cobblestone is definitely distinct clicking sound. Mm-hmm. And that sound was followed by actually a carriage sound, a wheel. If you've ever heard a metal wheel or, on a stagecoach or what have you, if you've ever experienced that, it's a unique sound. It's not something that generally happens daily, at least not in this century. So you could hear it. And fortunately, we had a static camera that we had set up during the spirit box session in the foyer. So the front door was open. That camera was still running. And we were so, so fortunate to actually catch the sound of horses. Now, I will say this. This is a residential area. There is no farms there. There are no horses there. Is that all it is just a neighborhood, just like any typical neighborhood that you would find in a smaller community. Houses next to one another, and there are no horses there. Is that there was none in the front of the house. There's none behind. There's actually a forest and a pond behind the home. So we were stymied. We had no idea what was causing that. But again, we were fortunate enough to capture that on video and to hear the horses. Now, here's the interesting part of the story. Mm-hmm. And probably the most interesting part of the investigation, of part of the story. Sharon had told us when we had gotten there, this was August of 2018, and why that's important is Sharon had told us that a month prior to us being there, so in July, Ghost Adventures had come and investigated the home. And she was none too happy with Zach and his attitude towards her spirits. And that's what she considers her spirits, and she's, again, very protective of the spirits. So she doesn't like when people yell. She doesn't like when people try to challenge the spirits that are in the home. Mm-hmm. So fast forward to us capturing this information and knowing that Ghost Adventures had been there a month prior to us. So we waited until they decided to air the episode, which was sometime in January of 2019. They aired the episode. We watched it just to see if they caught anything similar to what we caught. And lo and behold, about halfway through the show, Zach is standing in the front lawn. We know where he's standing because obviously we were at the location. And all of a sudden he starts talking about hearing horses. He goes, "Do you guys hear that? That's horses. It's like horses on cobblestone." And on video, when we were experiencing the horse sounds, I said almost identically the same thing that he said. Now, we have no contact with Ghost Adventures, of course. We have no contact with Zach, nor did we share any information. We did, however, post that information in August. Now, I can tell you from Sharon's disdain for Mr. Baggins and his crew, I'm sure they wouldn't have gone to the expense of going back to the location and shooting, saying that they heard horse sounds. Mm-hmm. So I can tell you quite honestly, never, and we know quite a few investigators throughout the country. We travel all over, and we've never heard anybody getting identical corroborating evidence. Now, the follow-up to this is that somebody from the neighborhood saw us post the video on YouTube and heard the horse sounds and wrote us and said, "Listen, no one has ever captured this. I've lived in the neighborhood. I live literally three houses down from McPike Mansion. We hear it every night in the summer. All of the neighbors know about it. Nobody's ever recorded it. And this is the first time that I know of that any investigation came out with hearing these horse sounds and having them recorded." And she said, "I just wanted to give you some validity. We all knew about it, and it's kind of a common daily thing that happens in the summer. So none of us really pay attention. It's not that big of a deal anymore to us." So I thought that was extremely, extremely interesting. And I think it lends credence to the fact of the paranormal, of really, I mean, unexplained, disembodied horse sounds that are being heard not only by the residents, but by two separate paranormal teams. I think that's probably one of the better evidence captures and corroboration for things that are unknown that I have ever encountered, whether I'm watching somebody else or we're fortunate that it was us that encountered it.
When something like that happens and there's sounds of horses in a carriage, almost sounds of what daily life would have been like at one point in time at the mansion, is that, and this is an opinion-based question, is that simply energy replaying itself over and over? Is that something where they're going about their daily lives still, and this is what you're picking up on? Is it some sort of time slip that we're catching? From your experience, your investigations, and your beliefs of what you've found thus far, where does your mind go on that? What do you think is happening when someone or those people nightly are hearing these sounds over and over?
Right. And so that was one of the things, even live, when we discussed it after the event took place. Is that we really felt that it was residual, and it might very well be a fact afterwards. We're kind of leaning towards this more and more, that that we believe that there might be portals, like streams of energy, that still interact with our plane. Mm-hmm. So it's a different plane that continues on. Right. The one theory is that audio, just like what we're conducting here, every audio wave continues on and just continues on to infinity. Mm-hmm. And so it might be that maybe there is some kind of a cyclical thing where it comes back, where mm-hmm. it plays out and it comes back. And in certain areas of the world, that energy intersects with our energy, with our current energy, with our current timeline. And that's kind of what we think of when these kind of things happen. It's very rare that you capture residual and then you have corroboration from so many different people.
Sure.
And so I thought that was really, extremely, extremely interesting.
I'd like to talk more about the McPike Mansion and some of the other things that have gone on there, some of the spirits. But first, before we get to that, I want to dig into the stories of the McPike Mansion being haunted. Where does the origin of the ghosts and people having experiences begin? How far back does that go that you're aware of? And are you aware of what are some of the original accounts of there being something in the house or at the property?
Well, and most of the information that we had gotten from about the property really came from Sharon herself. Mm-hmm. And you know, she had owned the property since the 80s.
Okay.
And she'd lived in that area for a long, long period of time prior to that. She said that there were accounts going back as early as the 1930s about the fact that, because there were other families that had lived there.
Sure.
And those families considered the fact that, you know, had brought up local legends and folklore basically to the neighborhood or to the neighbors, stating the fact that, that Henry McPike, we see him downstairs, we see him upstairs, we see a lady who resides in the upstairs bedroom, and we hear a child crying from time to time. And that goes basically all the way back to the 30s. Now, I'm unsure of when Mr. McPike passed away and when that property finally, you know, was sold and given over to a few different families. I believe that the last family that lived in there was up until the 1960s. And every family that had lived there had experienced basically these entities, but they're benign entities. They weren't very threatening, and everyone believes, including Sharon, that that Henry McPike watches over all of his property still, and is still inherently there, making sure that the house continues on. Therefore, his legacy continues on, and that's really Sharon's take and theory on it.
Mm-hmm. From investigating your own investigations and others that have been able to go in and investigate the house, is it a mix of residual things that are going on, as in the horses and the trotting in front of the home? Is there seemingly conscious entities going on here? Is Henry doing things that are truly interactive with the living, or do we see a lot of repeats type things going on that are residual?
I think that, and this is, you know, again, to allude to a lot of it, that the information that Sharon provided to us,
sure,
is that that Henry, more so than his wife, and certainly not the child. So I believe that the child, the crying child, is residual. I have no way of corroborating that. We didn't hear it at the time when we investigated, but we did get multiple voices coming through on the spirit box, and they were sentient voices. They actually gave us names. We heard the name. We heard Henry's name when we asked for names. It certainly came through as Henry. And I will say this is that other investigations have caught Henry stating who he is, the wife asking who you are. We also captured that as well. And there was a lot of, we had a lot of interaction from the spirit box itself with voices coming through, intelligent responses, not random responses where you're not quite sure what they're talking about or what they're saying, or you don't even know if it's something coming into play through a radio station. But definitely, I would say intelligent hauntings there. Now, as far as it's mostly people who have been there before experienced shadows, someone watching them, looking down the hallway. But a lot of the times, most of it's been audio. Most of it has been, unlike a lot of hauntings where you may get physical with audio, most of the accounts is mostly audio. And your occasional knock and bump, but you don't know if that's really the house itself or it's, you know, something disembodied doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's kind of what we were told and what we kind of experienced some of the same things. I mean, as far as audio goes, we definitely we could definitely corroborate that.
Sure. You said that the owner is fiercely protective of the house, and that's understandable, especially if you live there. Tell me about that. Tell me about the relationship that she has with the house and with the spirits that are there, from what you understood of the relationship that you have.
Sure. So what she basically said, what Sharon had told us was that again, she lived in the community for a while before Mick Pike had gone on an auction. And she felt compelled. She used to drive past it all the time. She was fascinated by it. And every time that she drove past, she would stare at the house. That was one of the things that I found when we talked to her that was like so convincing. Of what she had to say is, so she watched, she would go past the house constantly. When it came to auction, she said, she even told us, she said, I have no business even buying this house. I had no business even putting a bid in. And she goes, I don't know why I was compelled to do that. She goes, I have no connection really to Henry McPike or his family. And she said, I was just fascinated by this house. And you know, that happens a lot with people who are sensitive but don't know that they're sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they feel compelled to do certain things that are out of the ordinary. Now, she was a teacher in her working career. She actually taught physical education. And so she's kind of a tough lady. She's not she's definitely not a pushover lady for, being a 75 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She just absolutely had to have the house. That's how she related it to us. And she said that she would go in, she would talk to the ghosts, she would hear responses without any spirit boxes. And she said she just felt embraced when she was in the home. That's the way that she described it.
Yeah.
She felt like they were just embracing her, every time, and that she felt like she was doing them justice.
Do you think that some people are simply called or drawn to properties like that? We've heard it time and time again. Even when properties sometimes are not as peaceful as this one, sometimes you hear stories where, you know, there is the somewhat poltergeist type activity, but then sometimes it gets kind of dark and kind of disturbing and kind of scary. And sometimes just full on, this is freaky and almost someone is really trying to screw with you. But yet they still have this love, this passion for this house, even though it to a certain extent put them or some of their family members through hell. One of the more well-known cases of that, having had several conversations with Andrea Perrin from the Conjuring house that everyone knows about, probably one of the more well-known cases. But that's very much as she describes that house. They stayed in that property for many, many years. It wasn't as portrayed in the movie where haunted house and then they get out of it.
Right.
They were there for a long period of time, enduring, but at the same time, loving. And almost feeling drawn as if they're a caretaker, almost as if the property itself has developed its own persona as another member of the family. What is that when that happens with a property?
And again, I believe here's what I really truly believe.
Mm-hmm.
Two theories that I have that we'll allude to later about. Kind of why I have that theory.
Mm-hmm.
Is I believe number one that at least someone, if not the entire family, has the capability of being sensitive, you know, not psychic, but that sensitivity it makes them embrace things that they don't understand. That's my first theory on it. My second theory is really a past life kind of theory, is that could there be, you know, if you believe in past lives and you believe in reincarnation, could there very well be a past life that had some kind of connection to the entities that are there?
Mm-hmm.
And you feel compelled, right, to be with those entities again, whether you were friends with them, whether you interacted with them, but you're drawn to it. I mean, there's been so many stories of people, even with birthmarks, for example, that you know, the general theory in the world right now is, or has been for a while, is that if you have a birthmark, whether it be on your stomach or on your head or on your cheek, is they believe that's where you encountered a wound and what caused your death in a previous life. So I always think that that's interesting too, but that's what I really truly believe. So I think it's one of the two things that draws people there. You know, mm-hmm. Normally, you know, it, most people would, even if they knew history of the home, you would be, you know, do you really want to go through that every night? Right. Do you really want to have to interact with entities? So.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what I guess is what makes you wonder is, in some cases, a house can be a house. You can love your house. You can very much, you know, be proud of it and feel at home and comfortable there. But sometimes you have these stories where it goes beyond it. And I don't want to say to an unhealthy level, but it's different. It is a different level of connection. And quite often that different level of connection is then attached with a haunting or something that is going on in the house that would otherwise make many people feel extremely uncomfortable, and would take quite a bit of convincing to keep anyone there. But for some, it's just, I'm good. I'm at peace with what is going on in my house. Yeah. Very interesting how that happens. Tell me a little bit more about some of the other encounters, some of the other things that have happened in the house itself that you've found to be very compelling, whether it was things that you've encountered yourself on investigations or that you've heard from others. And from what I'm understanding here as well, with her very much being protective of the property, even before we get to that question of some of the encounters, I wanted to ask, is this a location that many get a chance to go and investigate, or does she vet people pretty well before she allows them to come in and respectfully research the property?
Is that, and it's the latter
okay.
of that,
yeah.
is that you can contact her, mm-hmm. and if she decides that the time frame works for her, mm-hmm. And I'm sure, based on even when we went there, I'm sure that she does look into it, whether she alludes to it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure she vets people out. She's on Facebook. She's extremely active. And once she likes you, mm-hmm. right, is that's the nice part of it, is that you're always welcome back.
Okay.
So, and for the encounters, you know, that we had in the home, the first thing was we weren't allowed to go up to the second floor, so that kind of limited some of our encounters. But they have a cellar in the back, and it's an unusual cellar because it's all limestone, and it's built underneath the house, and we were able to capture figures. We use an SLS X-Cam. I'm sure if anybody's seen any Ghost Adventures or Kindred Spirits or what have you, it's basically mapping software with an old Kinect bar that does a stick figure.
Mm-hmm.
And we utilize that a lot through a lot of our investigations. And when we were in the cellar, which you're allowed to go anywhere in the cellar, we were encountering random stick figures. Now, the interesting part of this was that there was a boiler. Now, one thing that Sharon had told us that they conduct, she has a couple of groups that come through that are ghost hunt functions, and that they conduct not any kind of Ouija board things or anything in the cellar, but they allow people to investigate the cellar. They give them a little bit of history of the home. And again, strong on EVPs and strong on spirit box interactions, but not so much on anything physical. So when we shared with Sharon what we found in the basement, we actually found we had encountered a few stick figures. And one of the interesting things was the boiler room, right, Lainey?
Yes.
Lainey's usually our resident SLS Connect person. So, you know, and we've since, while we've used it, we've since figured out some of the debunking things, like you can't shoot a lamp with it. It thinks a lamp is a person. Mm-hmm. Broomsticks are people. Windows and mirrors tend to confuse the hell out of it. So, I will defer to Lainey about the boiler room.
We caught two figures, actually. It seemed like they were working together on the boiler downstairs. When we asked for it to do something for us, to wave, lift a leg, it didn't respond to us. So it almost seemed like they were stuck trying to fix something with the boiler. The two were working together. How else would you explain?
Yeah, I would say working diligently together. I mean, that's, you know,
in their own world.
Yeah, they were unaffected by anything that we interacted with. We asked Sharon about that because that boiler has not worked, I guess, since the 50s. So, she had said, I don't think I've heard of anybody having any encounters in that boiler room. And so we went back and we kind of looked at some of the other evidence from other groups that had gone there, and no one really had captured anything in the boiler room. Now, we had asked if there were, you know, servants that worked there, and she said, yeah, of course. She said in the history there was, they had maids. And she said, I would assume that they probably had handymen that came in there. So, but there was no corroboration of that, you know, at all. But that was one of the more interesting encounters that we had out there. Now, Lainey had just reminded me of the fact that about the obelisk. This kind of goes back to the phone thing, but it was one of the things that I neglected to say. Is that the obelisk, for everyone listening, is a phonetic generator, and the theory behind it is that electromagnetic frequencies, the spirits can use their energy to manipulate this phonetic dictionary. And we had that obelisk sitting on the porch when the phone started taking pictures. And the interesting thing about this was we heard it going off just as the phone was taking pictures. I'd run down to the other side of the porch to go look, and what the obelisk had spit out was gateway, then it said phone, then the obelisk died and we couldn't get it back on for the whole rest of the investigation. It just would not come on. And ironically, when we were driving home, and McPike from us is about 4.5 hours away, when we were driving home from McPike, Lainey was so curious about why the obelisk didn't work. Is that so? She took it out of the bags, turned it on, and it worked.
No.
Is that we could not, so people always talk about devices being drained on locations, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And we still don't explain, don't know what, how to explain it. Is
sure.
that it was fully charged and it worked.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Don and Lainey of Spectra Waves. In part two of our conversation, we'll ask, why does Don think that the owner of the McPike Mansion allows investigations? How did Don get involved with paranormal investigations and his group Spectra Waves? What was Don's most surprising moment when he began his own paranormal investigations as a group or by himself? Did Lainey feel that her near-death experience makes her more sensitive to the paranormal? And did Don and Lainey research the history of the locations they investigate, or do they let the spirits tell them the story once they're there? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.